Welcome to Real Talk. This is the show that I am happy to host. I'm Susan McCabe, and it is the show about anything that piques my curiosity or yours. You can send your questions to realtalk@voiceofvashon.org, and I'll find an expert to get you some answers. In the meantime, I do have someone here with me this morning who's going to answer your questions about what is your dog thinking? Or maybe what is your cat thinking? She is Wendy Dahl, animal behavior consultant. Welcome, Wendy.
Welcome. Thank you for having me.
It's so fun to have you here. And you know, we have proven we can talk about dogs forever.
As you know, that could be an all-day conversation.
It could be. Yeah. I opened this with, what is my dog thinking? Because I think there are times when, of course, we anthropomorphize our pets.
Absolutely.
And we project our own feelings onto them. And I'm sure you're aware of that. As you train dogs, I think you've said you're really training the people, not the dogs.
That's a major part of it. And I think as humans, we tend to go to that cerebral perspective. The wonderful thing that I appreciate about companion animals is that they're usually not hiding how they're feeling or what they're thinking. They're not pretending to be something else than what they really are. So I don't know that there's that much mystery to that, but I think on our part, we need to spend more time observing them and getting to know them a little bit better, and especially their body language.
Yeah, interpreting can be off.
Absolutely.
Yeah, they are genuine. That's probably what we love most about them, that they are real and they are who they are in the moment. A lot for us to learn from them.
Right.
But I had some specific questions. One is, I have heard that there are different meanings for different wags on dogs' tails.
That's correct.
And so it isn't always, gee, I'm happy to see you.
No, I would encourage folks to look at the whole body when you're trying to, especially if it's a dog that you don't know, whether you're approaching it or it's approaching you, what are the other signals the dog is giving off? Does it look relaxed? Is its mouth open and kind of happy and tongue hanging out? Kind of a loose body that might be welcoming you and tail wagging. Or is this dog standing fairly stiff? There's hair on the back of its body that's lifted. And the tail may be wagging, but it's not a relaxed wag.
Is there a difference between the side-to-side wag and the circular wag?
You know, I've seen some research and some pieces about that. And I'm not all that informed on what those might mean. I think I've also seen, because there are some dogs that aren't really able to wag a tail very easily. I mean, pugs, it's a little difficult. They have tails that they're very short and they can get closer to their body when they're in their normal feeling good state of mind. But when they're a little sad or maybe not feeling well, their tail just kind of droops. So it often depends on the type of dog it is. There's a lot to be learned.
So other ways for us to tell how our dogs are feeling. What about looking in their eyes? What do we learn by looking in their eyes?
That's an interesting thing to think about, because a lot of dogs aren't comfortable when you stare into their eyes. Your own dog may be much more comfortable with you staring at them, you know, eye to eye. Mm-hmm. But if a stranger came into your house and did that same thing, they would think it would be fairly threatening behavior. When you notice dogs greeting each other, they don't come up and just stare into each other's eyes. If they're doing that, I would encourage you to separate them, because there may be some behavior issues that are going to be coming
like
out very quickly.
Yeah.
But there are certain breeds. I mean, I know Dobermans very well, and they're very likely to be looking in your face for direction or to understand what you're going to do next. So I think that some breed of dogs have been bred to pay more attention to a person, which includes looking at their face. But for the most part, going back to your question, what can you learn from looking into your dog's eyes? Again, I look at the entire body. And so looking into the eyes might, you know, bring you some comfort and some a chance to kind of meditate a little bit. But for the dog, I think it's more just how relaxed are you in, how relaxed is your dog or that dog in your presence?
Is everything they do motivated by a treat? We like to think that our dogs love us and that they understand us and they come to us and ask for attention because they like us, or they follow us around because they like us. Is that true, or is it all about the handout?
We and dogs have co-evolved for thousands of years, and I think they have us very well trained. I think they've, taught us to pay attention in certain ways when they're looking soulfully at you and you've got that, you know, piece of steak on your plate that, well, you know, what's the harm in sharing a little bit of that? But then there are things that, dogs are also wanting to be near us. And not just for the food and or the treats, but they get a lot of comfort from that as well. We can also be something they see as either protecting them from scary things in the world or needing to be protected as well.
Yeah, I became aware somewhere along the line with one of my dogs that her barking was not about protecting me. It was about telling me I got to do something about what's going on outside and protect her.
Absolutely. Yeah. And a lot of dogs that spend time indoors or next to fences, they've learned that barking makes that scary thing go away because, you know, the car drives on, the bicyclist moves along. Look at what I did. I scared them away. So I'm going to try that again next time.
How can we stop them from barking at everything that passes by? Is there a way?
Well, there's usually a reason for why dogs do what they do. And if barking is has been successful for them, there's no reason for them to change. And by that, I mean, like what I just mentioned, If it makes the scary thing or the interesting thing or the thing that arouses them leave, then they're more likely to do that. And if they don't have other things that are taking their attention away from that, there's no motivation for them to change that. So it would either be they would need something else to be focusing on, have a little more activity going on, or not have access to the source of what's causing that bark.
So if I can't control the cars that are passing or the mail carrier that's coming by or the dog next door, what I need to do is distract my dog.
Distract the dog. You could also teach them that when the mailman shows up, oh, look, let's play with a ball. Let's get some treats on the floor. Let's have a game. So then they start to associate that arrival with something good's going to happen.
Ah. So stick around, wait for the mail carrier.
Absolutely.
You talk about cues that we get from dogs, and I noticed you brought something here about growling that says punishing dogs for growling can create dogs that bite without warning. What's the story about that?
Well, I think this is a great visual poster. I love what Four Paws University on Facebook has shared with us so that we can start to think about the ways that we might not be thinking of the consequences when we tell our dogs, oh, don't growl, you shouldn't be growling. Our dogs have limited options on how to communicate with us. And most dogs start out on a very subtle level of communication that as humans we don't often see. Because we're not looking for it, whether it's they're lifting their lip or they're turning their head to avoid something. And so if those cues, those behaviors aren't recognized, then they move up to the next level of communication that's going to get your attention. And that can be a growl, It can be a bark. And if we punish that communication, which is still, I think, very appropriate, because the dog is telling you either I'm bothered by this, or you need to pay attention to something that's going on, mm-hmm. or that child is getting a little too close. If we punish that growl, what is left for the dog to do? Well, biting comes next, because more subtle options didn't work.
Oh.
And that's really can be a consequence of us telling dogs, don't bark, don't growl. And then all of a sudden people say, well, he just bit out of the blue. I don't understand why that happened.
Because they weren't paying attention.
Weren't paying attention and or had punished the dog previously for giving a more subtle signal.
Speaking of biting, there seem to be different kinds of bites too. Like the gentle, I don't even want to call it biting. It's when they take a hold of your hand with their mouth.
Mm-hmm.
Which is something I guess we try to train out of them, or should we?
You know, and okay. That's a huge question.
Oh, good.
I don't know where
that.
To start. No. Let me fashion a response here in my head. Usually we wouldn't want a dog to take hold of us with its mouth, but there are certain breeds that, for instance, some herding dogs that may have that kind of instinct bred into them that they need to either, you know, grab what they're trying to get attention about, or even a retrieving breed that has such a gentle mouth. Mm-hmm. And so this is their way of communicating. For the most part, we would want a dog to have learned bite inhibition, which that would mean the dog wouldn't be doing that.
Mm-hmm.
But if they are doing that, there are some ways that you can encourage them to not do that.
So we might go from that to licking. And what is the origin of the licking? We think of it as kissing. What is the real origin of it?
Well, I think for a lot of puppies, if they're licking around a mother's mouth, maybe they're trying to get some food. I know with wolves, if they bring back to the pack or the den, what they've been able to kill or retrieve from a dead carcass. and they come back and they regurgitate that for the pups. And so that licking may around the mouth may be encouraging the mother to feed them. Now, I'm not sure if we want to think about that as our dogs.
Lick our faces.
We prefer to think that they're just showing us affection, which is great.
Do you think it could be
a sign of submission. They could be nervous. It just depends on the frequency. And I mean, if it's just, you know, like a greeting kind of a single lick as opposed to, you know, just washing your face. That's a totally different kind of issue.
So there's the greeting lick. What is the washing your face? What does it mean?
I think it really depends on the dog. I know I've been around some smaller dogs that tend to do that quite a bit around your face. And I think sometimes it's just because they're really nervous, either because they're being held and they can't do anything else, or they've just learned to kind of do that as a soothing mechanism as well.
So they're soothing themselves.
Yes.
Huh. When it comes to training, now we have a guest, Leela Catapush, who comes onto the show every Wednesday as DJ Push to bring us music. And she is about to adopt a kitten, large breed. I can't remember the name of it now. It's not Maine Coon. It's something I'd not heard of before. And she's very excited about this. And they're going to click train the cat.
Great.
First of all, I was amazed to learn that cats can actually be trained, other than lions and tigers in the circus. Training cats, to my mind, has always been about discouraging them from bad behavior. Can you train a cat with a clicker to actually do good things?
You can train chickens, horses, sea mammals. If you can find ways to communicate with the animal, it's usually by observing behavior and clicking that and then providing the reward, whether it's a fish or a kibble or something of value to them, you can reinforce a behavior.
So what does the click actually do?
It marks the behavior. it is used as a, you know, that tone.
Yeah.
And so it captures very quickly what that animal has done. You could, instead, if you didn't have a clicker, you could say something like, yes. It has to be a kind of a really quick sound that helps that animal understand, that's it. That's what you want me to do.
Oh.
And then in a second, then you follow up with the treat. And you really, I mean, I know people who have trained fish to do things. So
really?
It's actually fascinating because once you start to understand how that process works, you start looking around to see what kind of behaviors you could train. And you'll spend more time observing animals to see, oh, now, if I can reward that, what else could I add to that step of behavior to create more like a, you know, if you wanted to teach your dog to learn some tricks. So there's a lot of fun things you can do with clicker training, as well as helping them understand, we're going to be doing your toenails now, or, you know, more some of those things that they may not be really happy about doing.
Yeah, that's what I was wondering. That, so grooming, that sort of thing, can the click be used to discourage bad behavior?
If you're teaching them something else to do instead of the bad behavior, and something that you've either seen them do already or something that you know they would be interested in doing.
So understanding why they're doing bad behavior might help. For instance, why do dogs dig? Why are they filling my yard with holes? Is what it is.
I think it depends on the dog and the situation. There are certainly some dogs that find a lot of pleasure in digging.
Just for fun.
Because it's something, yeah, they need to do something. I mean, dogs, we can't just put them on a shelf when we're not around. And so then they often find things to, you know, occupy their time, go out in the backyard and, hey, this is a great place for me to dig. It's nice and soft. There's all these interesting plants here. Well, I'm just going to dig a little bit more because this seems to be the place to do that. There's other dogs that will dig a little bit just to lay down in a cool spot.
Oh.
So it can be from boredom or because it's fun, or because, you know, they were bred to chase rodents and they're underground.
Oh.
Yeah.
So if you've got a dog who is active and you have to be away, what's the best thing to do? Bring them along with you in the car or leave them at home with something? Do you crate them up? Do you leave them with toys or do you take them with you? What's the best thing to do for an active dog who needs to be engaged?
Yeah, that's a good question. And if you can find time in your day, either before you leave or when you come home, that provides them with exercise, it provides them with some mental stimulation, that will help to balance out what happens during the day. But if you're gone for long periods, you know, crating for shorter periods, like maybe 4 hours, is appropriate. And if it's a dog that's been, you know, comfortable in a crate and is not going to be trying to escape.
Right.
But I would also encourage folks to either have somebody drop in during the middle of the day to take them for a walk. If it's a senior dog who may be a little bit less likely to, well, who enjoys napping most of the day, then that's not a big
it's
concern.
Not a big deal, right?
But you can also leave some puzzle toys around to help a dog discover those. And
what are puzzle toys?
Well, for instance, there are some toys that you can put treats in. It takes a while for them to figure out how to get those out. You can also hide things around the house for your dog to discover. If you've played games with your dogs, like you hide things and then you say, go find it. And then they have to go searching throughout the house for something. That helps with their mental stimulation as well. But for active dogs, you need to find out what's going to help use up some of that energy in a good way. Because otherwise, if they're left home during the day, they're going to find things like shoes or drapes or things that help them channel that energy that they need to work out.
I have read that bone chewing is equivalent to exercise. Is that true?
I don't know. I think that it probably is soothing to some dogs. And depends on, I mean, if this is a cooked bone or a raw bone. Cooked bones are not very healthy because they can break off and splinter and can cause some issues. If it's a raw bone, you need to be careful about if there's a lot of fat on it, that kind of thing. It might be too much for a dog to ingest, and you'll come home to some other things that you don't want to find on your floor. but if you find anything that's safe for your dog to occupy its time with, can be a fairly sturdy rubber item, or some of the more condensed plastic bones, that kind of thing.
Yeah, like the Nyla bones?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But it needs to be something that really your dog, if it's an industrial type of chewer, needs to be safe, something that's safe for the dog to be chewing on. As far as exercise, though, I don't think anything's going to really substitute for getting outdoors, going for a walk, playing ball. And you need to help broaden that dog's environment and get out and sniff some things and mark and be able to channel that energy in a healthy way.
And move around.
Absolutely.
Just burn some of that up.
Right.
This is Real Talk. I'm Susan McCabe, your host. We're talking with Wendy Dahl, animal behavior consultant, about what are your pets thinking? And we are able to do this with support provided by Giraffe, which celebrates creativity, beauty, and justice. Giraffe is committed to sourcing home and personal goods that reflect your values: fair trade, local, global, and green. They're open 7 days a week at their new location in the heart of town, or at giraffehome.com. They are right across the street from our storefront studio here on Vashon Highway. We've been talking a lot about dogs and what they think. What are they thinking? I've often thought I would like to be a dog for a day just to see what it's like to get all that information through your nose and how stimulating it must be.
Mm-hmm.
What about that? I've often felt when we're training dogs particularly that we are basically asking them not to do their dog things. What does that do to them? And is it a service or a disservice?
I love that question. I think that most of the time we don't really consider how limited our dogs' lives are. I mean, they're basically at our mercy.
Yeah.
As far as the hours that we can spend with them, about where we take them, they don't get to make a lot of choices. And so they're often left dealing with things that they have no control over. Sometimes if we, we can certainly take them to agility, finding those kinds of exercises that they might get excited about. But unless they're enjoying it, that may not be a choice that they would have made themselves.
Huh.
So really getting to know your dog, seeing what brings your dog joy, and even considering changing your plans. For instance, if you're thinking about taking your dog for a walk, but then you discover that maybe your dog wants to go this way or do that, being open to seeing what other things you might be able to do with your companion animal that is more of their choice than what we think the dog should be doing.
That kind of brings me to the idea of every dog needs a job. And how do we figure out what our dog's aptitude might be?
Mm-hmm. And I think some dogs would love to have the job of being a napper full time. That they have shorter amounts of time when they are, more likely to be active. And then there are dogs who would prefer to be active for most of the day, like some of the hunting breeds. So finding out what your dog enjoys doing is really going to be a key to supporting the happiness of your dog and the finding out what works for your dog and what also fits in with your life as well.
Yeah, like if they feel as though they want to guard the home and the family, that's a great thing as long as they're not barking at everything that goes by.
Right.
But the rest is really just trial and error, is it not?
I think so, because I think even that probably is the same thing with children. As they're growing up, we may have certain ideas about what we think they should be doing and or learning about and or studying for. And then at some point we discover that they are their own person and they may have some ideas of their own. Now, that's not necessarily what our dogs or cats are going to be doing. But I encourage folks to really spend time thinking about what that animal enjoys and finding ways to support that joy. It's not necessarily a job that the dog needs to have. It may just need to spend more time with you or being outdoors with you. Finding out what your companion animal, what brings joy to that animal.
Oh, we've only got 3 minutes left and we have spent our entire time on dogs. How do we know what a cat is thinking? Are they thinking?
I like to encourage folks to watch what the animal is doing. And it's more about the behavior than what they may be thinking. If the cat is relaxed and hanging out and happy to be around people, I think that's a sign of a healthy cat who's very confident. You may have another cat that hides every time someone comes to the home. Mm-hmm. And in that case, if that's been an ongoing practice, I think that's just who that cat is. And thinking about what they might be thinking about, I think it's more likely to, if you're seeing what the behavior is, there's a reason for that in their mind. And they're either feeling comfortable or they're afraid or they want to be fed.
That's what I keep wondering. Oh, and as cats age, I have learned they do something called caterwauling, where they're literally moaning aloud.
Right.
What is that about?
You know, I'm not sure if that's, a neurological issue, just a characteristic of an aging animal, but I've certainly experienced that with my cats in the past. And I kind of liken it to, it was something that he would do during the middle of the night and he would go downstairs and you could hear him. It was almost like a submarine with a sonic kind of, being sent out to see where the walls were. And he would do his rounds and then he'd come back up and go to bed. So,
well, that's interesting. So he knew what he was doing.
Well, or it was just a practice that he did every night for whatever reason.
Yeah, the cats too, I think, are... Well, as we discover, the more time we spend with animals, they all have individual personalities.
Absolutely.
They
right.
are people with four legs and fur.
Well, I wouldn't call them people, but
no?
Felines who really get a lot of pleasure from, watching those birds outside the window and, enjoying a warm lap, at least most of them.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
We've been talking with Wendy Dahl, animal behavior consultant here on Real Talk, about what is your dog thinking, what is your cat thinking, and we have unfortunately run out of time. Wendy, I want to thank you. This is an endless conversation.
It's my pleasure, Susan. Thank you so much.
Next week, join us at 11 o'clock on Wednesday, and we'll be talking to Mark Hungerford about his book, The Quiet Bower, which is all about folks in World War II. He is an islander and an island author. You've been listening to Real Talk. I'm Susan McCabe, and I want to thank you for listening. Stay tuned for the rest of What's Going On here on the Voice of Vashon.